Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 454th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I will give you your opinions on the American game for everyone. And, of course, right now everything is on hold, including the writings over at my colleagues at Winston Metro and, of course, the rest of the SB Nation family website. The chat room is open, so if you have any questions tonight, please go ahead and ask the panel. My panel tonight, three experts that I believe are the best of the best when it comes to this business, not just here in the United States for our game, but of course the world, as this coronavirus has definitely put a screeching halt on the game, not just here, but of course the rest of the world. Joining me right now, former Fox Soccer analyst Gary Gazza Richards, of course, former executive producer of the Champion Soccer Radio Network, Carter Krishnire from World Soccer Talk, Devin Kerr, ESPN Plus, and ESPN analyst during Open Cup rounds and United Soccer League Championship League. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. First things first, we are going to go to our good friend Gary Richards. Gazza, in all your years and all of your life supporting Arsenal and watching this game, not only in England, but around the United States and around the world, have you ever seen anything like this coronavirus that has put basically the world's favorite game into a screeching halt?
Good evening. How are you doing, Daniel? I've got to say that I have never seen anything like this. I don't think anybody ever has. I don't think anybody ever will. Obviously, during the First World War, which you alluded to, I was around back then, but I'm not, was put on hold. Same with the Second World War. But as far as a global shutdown, I can only imagine what the players are going through now. I went through a few things in the 70s playing back in England, and I'm sure we'll get into that at some point. But the players have got to be just pulling their hair out. You know, if you've just lost a game, you don't want to wait 3 or 4 days to go back and play again. You want the next day, boss. You know, put me back in. These guys are going to wait. They have no idea. Is it going to be days, weeks, months? Maybe the season's going to get shut down completely and be a wash. That's going to be a shame for the fans. I don't know what to do with myself Saturday and Sunday mornings, and I'm sure you guys don't either.
No, I don't. I mean, none of us do right now. I mean, it's unbelievable. Devin Kerr, I know you support Liverpool. I mean, they're having probably one of the greatest seasons ever in the Premier League. I mean, how many points clear are they from second place? I'm assuming it's still Manchester City, but, you know, they're on the verge of winning their first Premier League title in God knows how long. And now this situation has basically put their title hopes on a standstill, which is unreal to consider not only what Jurgen Klopp has done for Liverpool, but, you know, how Liverpool supporters around the world, not only in England, but in, you know, even here in the United States, they can taste the Premier League trophy, you know, on their lips, and it's still far away because we haven't completed the Premier League season, and it's still, you know, this coronavirus has put it to a screeching halt.
Yeah, it's interesting when you kind of look at all how the year that Liverpool takes off, and you talked about how many points clear. Someone asked me the other day, I said about 135 points clear, but it doesn't matter. we don't know how it's going to play out. And you know, the last time they won was 89-90. I was 5 years old. I mean, I just getting into the sport, chasing my brother around, and it's frustrating. You know, it's how poetic is it, though, right, that they're going off in a season like this, and this is how things may or may not finish. We don't really know. You know, I've gotten a peek behind the curtain within the United States sectors with USL, you know, what's going to go on with CONCACAF Champions League, with MLS. But when it comes to the Premier League, you know, I know guys that played in the 90s like Ian Bishop, and he's just kind of, he does stuff for TalkSport. He kind of turns his head, not exactly sure where this is going to go. Frustrating for sure. You've seen it with Jurgen Klopp step up into the limelight, and you know there are things more important than football. And unfortunately, I think the United States is figuring that out the hard way, and they're not necessarily paying attention to what has gone on overseas, and that's difficult. You know, we should be learning from our friends, whether it's in the Far East or in Europe, and unfortunately, they were in front of us, and we should try and capitalize on the fact that things can get better. I don't think we're necessarily doing that, but I mean, it is still nice to look up and see Liverpool sitting atop the table. Sorry, Gary.
That's okay. I know you've got an agenda here, Daniel, but you know, I grew up in the 70s, and you know, Liverpool was the dominant team, as Manchester United were in the 90s, 80s, and 90s. And Man City has been recently. And I've got to say, you love to hate the other team, but I'm so in awe of what Liverpool have done. I mean, missing the league by 1 point last year, and what an absolute crime it would be to give them the trophy without playing a game, without playing in front of their home crowd, without playing against an away crowd that could, you know, celebrate such a great accomplishment. I mean, 25 points clear is unheard of. And then for it to get cancelled this way, if it was to in fact get cancelled, would be such a shame for any Liverpool fan, let alone the players and staff that have worked so hard to achieve what they've done this year.
No, it's been an incredible year for Liverpool. It's been an incredible year for the Premier League. I mean, obviously, Cardick, you know, how many years ago it was or seasons ago it was that Leicester City pulled off the miracle season and won the Premier League away from, you know, Man City, Chelsea, Man United, Liverpool. I mean, they had an amazing year, able to finish it, obviously. Of course, the odds were against them, and whoever dared to bet, you know, those odds, you know, they're probably millionaires by now. But still, Cardick, you know, we still have a UEFA Champions League to continue. We still have a CONCACAF Champions League where three quarterfinal first leg ties are finished, and LAFC and Cruz Azul have not even began their first leg of the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions League. We're seeing tournaments now on hold. The Open Cup first round is now on hold. It's just something that it's just so crippling right now to see competitions in Europe and here in the United States and in our region of CONCACAF either not being able to finish or just not able to continue.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the great regret of this year is the Bundesliga and Serie A, because for the first time in several seasons, both Juve and Bayern, I don't want to say look poor. Actually, there have been times this season where Bayern have been unplayable. And in fact, that might carry into the Champions League if the Champions League finishes. And we saw it in the first leg at Stamford Bridge. But it's the first time that I felt like Juve's grip on Serie A is slipping since the year Allegri won Serie A with Milan. I can't remember what that was. I think it was the 10-11 season. And in terms of the Bundesliga, I've been so impressed watching Julian Nagelsmann at Leipzig and the sort of not only the integration of the playing principles, the same things he did at Hoffenheim with a lot of young players and a lot of bargain buys, but also just the culture around that club. And, of course, Daniel, you're very familiar with the culture around Red Bull football with your own coverage of Red Bull New York. Yeah, all these competitions being on hold, really, we don't know when we come back from this elongated break, assuming and in the case of Juventus, I mentioned Serie A. I'm not assuming Serie A resumes. I think the coronavirus situation in Italy is much worse than other parts of the continent, at least as of now. I would be very surprised if they could resume that season. But assuming that the Bundesliga, the Premier League, La Liga, et cetera, resume, and we're able to resume European competition, with this layoff, who knows what happens? We thought Real Madrid was dead and buried after the first leg at the Bernabeu when Pep came up with what was a masterclass and playing without a striker and playing Jesus wide and having him chase deep. Now that second leg at the Etihad, whenever it happens, all bets are off. And same thing with Bayern and Chelsea, right? I mean, this is a reprieve for some clubs. I think for Spurs and Jose Mourinho, they're out of Champions League, right? Leipzig eliminated them fairly easily. But they're going to get Sissoko back now, for sure. They're probably going to get Kane back by the time we resume. They may even get Son back by the time we resume. So guess what? And I hate to say this to Gary, Spurs might still be in the top four at the end of the year. And I had written them off completely because of those injuries. And I hate to see Jose be the big beneficiary of this, but, you know, he lucks out all the time, right?
He isn't called the special one for nothing.
I don't know. I think that Mourinho is past his best as far as the sell-by date. You know, it was a history with him. 3 years, he would come in, everyone would be excited. They'd buy into his story. He'd organize the defense, get them solid. They'd win trophies. And in the third year, everyone stops listening to him, and he's done. I don't think that they have the talent throughout the entire side to be able to achieve anything with him. And I think he'll get frustrated by that.
It's possible.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think that what we've seen with Jose also, his tactics now are dated. One thing he was always known to be able to do is park the bus and get defensive performances and, you know, play the victim card with his size. We saw it with Chelsea over and over again, and there would be a reason you would see those sort of spirited performances out of JT and out of Lampard in the glory days of Chelsea. He does not have that quality anymore to rally players. So, Gary, I think you're right, but I do think that they benefit because they were getting buried, and now they're going to get several players back because the season will probably not resume until June.
And that's a possibility, guys, and that's the one thing that's going to be interesting to see. And, you know, Devin, Euro 2020, I believe, is this summer, and that's been postponed. You're not going to have a European Cup tournament until possibly next summer. To see, you know, the greatest of the greats that play in Europe to, you know, go after that continental title. I mean, that throws FIFA into a tizzy itself, because what's going to happen now with European World Cup qualifying for next year? How is that going to be handled? I mean, do you feel that they're going to have to, FIFA might have to reschedule international dates just to accommodate the European World Cup qualifiers, or for everyone's World Cup qualifiers? I mean, if we're looking into this, Devin, really seriously, with World Cup qualifying on the horizons right now for Qatar 2022, you know, World Cup qualifying can be in jeopardy, you know, for all six continents, all six confederations.
It's difficult when you go global. I look at in terms of when you look at European play, and it's hard because when you go domestic leagues and international, there's always so many contrasting, right? You know, pretty much everybody in Europe, you go into camp early July, you go into preseason and everything, and then you're playing games in August. Depending on where your Champions League qualifier is, and your season can run all the way till May, however that stretch goes. I saw an idea that came out. I wish I could take credit for it, but I think it's brilliant, to be honest. I saw Wayne Rooney say something about it. I also saw Roy Keane say something about it. Leave it to the Man United boys to come up with it, right? They said that the idea was, so you're moving Euros to 2021, and I get that, and you're going to have to bounce qualifiers around. But in theory, this all lines up for the 2022 World Cup. Now, I think it's an abomination that they were moving it to end of November, to end of December in general come 2022. I didn't like how it played out with Qatar, but it is what it is. Regardless of scandals and bribes, we're there, and that's where it's going to be. But being that it's going to be in that time frame, it actually aligns now where if you continue play, and I agree, I think Serie A is probably done, but everybody else can step in. If you continue play, you will get, I think they said they were going to give four or five weeks off. So basically you go preseason, directly right into everything. It's just a little bit shorter. If you're a Premier League team that's not in Champions League, you're done end of April, and you've got, they usually give them like 8 weeks off, 10 weeks off, something like that. And if you're a big name, you're not coming back to camp in mid-June, end of June. You're coming back early July. So now they get an extended break. Yes, it's kind of split up based upon the coronavirus right now, but you run right into the finish of your season. You get 6-8 weeks off. Then you come back, you go into camp, and then the whole cycle just starts again. Now, in terms of international dates and qualifying, yes, it's going to be frustrating, but it's easy enough to shift now. what'll be interesting is how do the domestic leagues respond to it? Because we've already seen guys like the United States men's national team where Colorado Rapids won't let Sam Bynes go, but Columbus Crew will let someone else go, you know, like they'll let Jardes go, whoever it may be. That's going to reverberate throughout every single league around the world. We've heard it before how, you know, in Germany, it was always for country. When they rebooted and they did their whole thing, it was country first and then clubs had to follow. When you go to the FA in England, that's not the case. You know, they butted heads multiple times. It was better with Southgate in 2018. But this is going to have direct implications on the law because it's going to throw things off. I think people are capable of getting it done, but it'll be real interesting to see how each individual organization handles it, because internationally it should be fine, but domestically they're still going to butt heads.
And, Gary, I think that's the number one issue right there, isn't it? What the clubs are going to say. You know, they need this, you know, said player to remain in line for either title hopes or, you know, getting out of the relegation zone. Because, you know, once again, Gary, you know this as well as I do, you know, and you need that certain player to continue to earn points to either, you know, make a title run, challenge for a title, stay in the middle of the pack, avoid being relegated. Those clubs may not give up those players for their national teams.
Well, you know, back in the 70s, I mean, it was all about playing for your country. Yeah, guys are absolutely right. Devin, you're absolutely right there. It's like it was the pride of the shirt of playing for your national team, and that's what Germany is committed to. Now, you've got such a huge financial package that is invested in the Premier League, which is your number one seller. So obviously, week in and week out, what has to be shown? Your number one seller, which is the target players that both country and club want. But I'm sorry, in this day and age, I think that internationals are a thing of the past. I really do, because Sky and BT Sports have put so much money into the Premiership, making it such a global package of entertainment. That's really all they're talking about now. We don't want to put games on behind closed doors because half the entertainment is missing. Half of the crowd noise, the ambiance, is about that noise at Anfield, at Old Trafford. And when you take that out of the equation, you've got half a package to sell. So it's really, really difficult. Having gone through several relegation battles, I can tell you, players didn't want to go and play for their country. They wanted to stay and fight and roll their sleeves up and play for their club. Because at the end of the day, who's paying your wages? The club is. It's pride to play for your country. It's paychecks to play for your club. And that's really where the importance is. And I think because of the international flavor of the way the Premiership is, MLS has certainly got a lot of that where players have to go back to their own country. There's an awful lot of travel time. Some of them just don't see the need to want to play for their country anymore. And it's a real dilemma going forward. I wouldn't be surprised if these guys try and curtail some, you know, when this season starts up again. I think international friendlies are out of the package completely. I think they just dropped. And I think going forward, international friendlies will get dropped. We've got to concentrate, obviously, the Euros, CONCACAF, World Cup qualifying. Those are going to take precedent in those spaces that are left available when, in fact, the leagues do start.
Exactly, Gary.
Yeah,
now,
actually, Daniel, let me jump in there for a minute.
Go ahead, jump in. Go ahead, Carter.
I agree with what the guys are saying, and actually, I can tell you, Germany isn't that different than England now. It was when they did DOS reboot after the Euro 2004. It isn't anymore. TV contracts for the Bundesliga, and they're not as enormous. No league in professional sports has the kind of TV deals the Premier League does. But the Bundesliga, it's so scared of losing TV money or having to return TV money. And keep in mind, the model of German clubs is very different than British clubs. British clubs are owned by sheikhs here, you know, American investors there, and even Championship and League One clubs are being bought up by foreign owners. In Germany, you still have the 50+1 rule. They're community-based clubs, with the exception of Bayer Leverkusen, Wolfsburg, and Leipzig. So that TV money is critical to them. And my sources in German football have told me within the last 2 weeks that the DFL was actually adamant about the Euros being canceled and not releasing players for internationals come this June, because they need to finish their season because of the TV money. They're so dependent on it. And again, they have clubs that are not owned by single proprietors or foreign owners. They have community-owned clubs. Even Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, these huge clubs are member-owned clubs. So, albeit ones with huge sponsorship deals. So they're actually not in a very different boat than the Premier League. And I have to assume the same is the case with La Liga and Liga 1 and Serie A. I do not think international football is a priority right now. I think club football, finishing league seasons, realigning the calendar, I agree with that idea, with Qatar 2022 already disrupting the natural flow of European football, European club football, this may be the time to just realign. So you play this season out till September break, and then realign the calendar accordingly. One quick thing, though. Contracts, there are contracts, like, for example, Chelsea's got Willian and Olivier Giroud, both who can technically walk on or free on July 1st. So assuming the Premier League season gets extended, Giroud has now worked his way back into that team because that's why he is rubbish and Abraham has been injured. I think Frank Lampard is going to want to make sure that contracts that, and not just Frank Lampard, every manager, contracts that expire June 30th are now rolled to whatever, September 30th or August 30th. Agents may have something to say about that. So this is a little more complicated than we may think. And that's one component I'm a little concerned about, because the agents, as everyone on the show knows, have a tendency to hold football hostage when it suits their interests.
Yeah, but don't you think that people can step in and the lawyers can step in and say, you know what, there's a moratorium about this, and say, you know what, everyone's going to get a 30-day extension or however long the league's going to go. Now, obviously, you're right. It's got to go to lawyers both sides, but they've got to commit to say, you know what, show us some good faith here. Let these players play, you know, pay for play. You know, we'll pay you for each game that you play and however long it takes in the next 4, 5, 6 weeks.
I think it's possible.
Yeah, I agree. I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too, because, you know, we got to see these seasons completed, and we got to see, you know, what's going to happen down the road, because it's not – I mean, let's be honest here, guys. I mean, look, let's just say for the hell of it and I just have to look at the current table, because if the current three sides that are in the bottom of the Premier League table, or the whether it's two or three sides that are on the bottom of the Bundesliga table, the Serie A table, or the La Liga table, you know, you don't complete the season, and they decide to end it right there, and then they're forced to be relegated. Meanwhile, you got three clubs in the lower levels, like in the Championship, they get promoted. You know, is that the fair way of – like you said, Gary, it'd be a shame if they don't complete the season, because obviously you don't see Liverpool winning the title the proper way. Would it be the proper way to see those three sides relegated at the bottom of the Premier League table, and then you have those three sides not even promoted properly because they haven't even gone through their playoffs yet in the Championship League?
Say, you know what, if it's frozen as it is now, and you look at the league table, Bournemouth, Aston Villa, and Norwich, in theory, are going down. But Watford and West Ham are only goal difference separating them from going down also. I think you freeze it. Nobody mm-hmm. goes down. The league below it, you know, the Championship, those top two teams, you make it 24 league season. You know, you put 24 teams in this league like it used to be before the Premiership was. You promote four teams. Maybe put three teams up in the lower ones, so three teams up there. Let them go up. Zero relegation, because you know what relegation does. Nowadays, it puts clubs out of business. The financial burden on a club to get relegated is absolutely devastating. We saw it with Bury this year, one of the clubs, and there's several others that are on the verge of going out because they can't play, can't earn money right now. So you just freeze the position of the league. You add those three or four teams into the Premiership for next year. Give them the boost of doing it. But at the end of the season, then maybe two drop out. And then the following season, maybe two drop out. And then you get back to that balancing act of where you're back to 20 teams if you want. I think it's a process that they've got to look at and go, financially, how do we protect the clubs? But also, we've got to protect the interests of the game.
Right, exactly. I think that's the number one thing there.
Daniel, real quickly on that, since Bari already got expelled from the Sari already got expelled from the Football League earlier this year, and Bolton
right.
started mm-hmm. the year with like a 20-point deduction. They're going to get relegated anyway. So you're already down one team in the Football League, and there was League One was going to relegate one less team to League Two. So I think that already gives you some flexibility to maybe do what Gary is saying, and I agree with that. I remember when the Premiership was 22 teams. That I think you can go back to that for a few seasons and gradually get that back down to 20 or stay at 22. That might be better for the television companies. You get 42 fixtures out of that instead of 38. That's more lucrative for TV. And with the championship on down, similar thing. And like I said, they're already down one team because of Bari. So they were going to relegate one less team. They were only going to relegate, I think, one team from the Football League this season and bring two up from the conference. So I think that's very possible, what he's proposing. And I think, Gary, you should that to the FA right now.
There you go. I think it's a great idea. It's a great concept. And in theory, we've got it. We'll package it and sell it right now. Now, here's your issue is the FA wants to have its spaces that are allocated for internationals. You've got the FA Cup. Same with the German Cup and the Spanish Cup, Italian Cups. You've got all these other cups that are in there to promote business and make money. But the Premiership doesn't need those cups. I don't think anymore that you have these teams in it. I think they need to be money makers for the lower leagues. Give them the opportunity to go and play in a big stadium, in a big final, and make it televised, make it a day. And hang on a minute, we never saw Berry play. Let's see Berry play. Maybe you'll get a few fans from the U.S. to watch. So there's somebody watch Bolton, somebody watch Scunthorpe, or whoever. And it just try and reformulate these cups so that they get that Cinderella feel about them. The FA Cup always had that, and it's lost that stigma of that buzz about it over the last few years. It's just the big clubs rest their players until it gets to the quarterfinal, semifinal, and final, and it's such a shame. They should be allowed to participate. They're not going to put their best teams in it.
And speaking about that, Devin, obviously tonight, if we were supposed to, you know, have all these seasons starting here in the United States with MLS and USL, tonight was supposed to be the Open Cup Round 1 preview show with yourself and Tyler Terrence, but because of this coronavirus, Devin, unfortunately that's been thrown away for now temporarily, but, you know, this was the beginning of the Open Cup. This was supposed to be the start of the expanded scheduling of the Open Cup to begin the first round for those amateur sides in USL League Two, NPSL, the amateur teams that have qualified for their proper spots, and then instead we're talking about this.
Yeah, interestingly enough, actually supposed to be on. I was supposed to be the analyst for the Virginia United Christos game in the opening round. Christos FC, the team that made it all the way to the fourth round against DC, the amateur team back in 2017. And it's frustrating. Look, I think one thing that people have to remember with everything that's going on, and it's great that we can chat about, you know, what ifs. What if they move this? What if they bring teams down? What if they change it? This, that, and the other. How about the lives that have been affected by this? And I'm going to use myself selfishly as it because I make a living as an analyst. I make a living going on to studio shows. I make a living calling games for a living. I'm unemployed at this point in time. I know plenty of people that are in similar situations that, look, it's we're going, okay, tomorrow should have been this. Open Cup cancels. I mean, the USL Championship has already pulled out of it. That's official. You know, they cancel it. I'm being told behind the scenes that it's still heavily considered that MLS and USL are going to do a full season. I don't see how that's going to happen, personally, with the way that things are playing out, and it's only getting worse. But just think about the fact that people who, whether you're a play-by-play, an analyst, what if you're a cameraman, what if you're a production specialist, any directors, like all of these people that no longer have the opportunity to be involved, not just in their domestic leagues, but in the Open Cup runs. You know, the fun runs of Christos FC or FC Cincinnati in USL, or, you know, we get a repeat and the Houston Dynamo can be terrible in MLS, but somehow find a way to make it run and win the whole thing. We don't have that luxury anymore. And so many people are just at the bottom of the barrel looking up, and it's not like you can go get a job. You know, it's not like you can submit your application and go, oh, you know what, let me go work for Amazon or let me go work for this. You can, but, I mean, it's proven that this thing is spreading faster than ever, and that's frustrating. You know, it sucks to look at my schedule and go, oh, well, calling that game tomorrow, calling this game. I mean, you guys alluded to the Champions League. I was in my car driving to the studio to call the LAFC Cruz Azul first-round game when my producer called and said, hey, you know, they're canceling everything until further notice. Please don't let anybody know. Just turn around and drive home. And I said, okay, great. And until we get any news, it's frustrating for everyone, and we're in just this terrible holding pattern.
And that's what it is.
It's a whole thing here to make sure that the MLS gets put onto the schedule of the rest of the world. It's a conspiracy. What would you say to that? If now MLS gets pushed to September and starts the season along the lines of the rest of the of Europe, which they've always butted, you know, rebuffed and said no, 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 and they did that and it worked out. Do you think that might be the turning point of it goes in with the rest of the leagues in the world?
Yeah, I tell you that it should be that anyway. The problem that we're going to run into is, and I'm all for that, is you get everybody behind the scenes saying we don't want to compete with football. We don't want to compete with basketball. And they're worried about money. We were just talking about the deals with Bundesliga and Premier League and their TV deals. Imagine MLS on a Sunday afternoon trying to compete with football. Or imagine them trying to, you know, over Christmas break. It's crazy.
Yeah,
I think it should be that way.
I tell you what, no, I disagree with you here. Now, sorry, Daniel, but this is where we step in. The fact is that, you know what? Everyone's afraid, and that's Don Garber at the top there. He's got a wet pair of knickers and doesn't know what to do with them and doesn't know when to change them. I guarantee you that he's not afraid of that. There's other stuff going on. But if the clubs played in a league season along the lines of the rest of Europe and the rest of the world, and he's afraid of the competition, I think you'd be sorely amiss to not give that a chance, because I guarantee you MLS is going to get so much more, and it is. You know, I've been saying for 30 years that I've been out here, it's going to get there one day. It's going to get there one day. Every year it has gone up in viewership, up in teams, up in popularity all the way through. NFL has taken its dips. Major League Baseball has taken its dips. Ice hockey has taken its dips. Basketball's had its moments too. MLS really hasn't. And I tell you what, you put them up against that, no, they're not going to get the numbers that NFL gets. Nobody is. That's why it is what it is. But I tell you what, those loyal supporters that you have right now, this moment, would absolutely still support you on a Sunday afternoon in November.
And Gary, not only that, and Daniel knows because he's had me on the show before talking about this issue, that I've been a long-term advocate for flipping the calendar. It's not just an economic argument. I will tell you, American players will never develop as well as they can as long as you're continuing to play a March to November season, because you're playing through the hottest months of the season. You're not aligning your transfer windows with the rest of the world. You're not developing your players in optimum conditions. I can tell you, having worked for various clubs, and Daniel knows this, we've had this conversation before, how many training sessions get canceled in the summer? How many games get postponed because of inclement weather? How the intensity of those training sessions is not up to the level of the intensity of training sessions in Europe. And it's not just because, oh, well, the European clubs are more serious, those players are better. This is a big factor. I think everything you're saying is correct, Gary, about MLS having its day. I do not think they will have their day unless they flip the calendar. And I think this is the chance, right? And it's
absolutely
Because of dumb luck. They got to do it.
And
that's my view.
When I was with Fox and I was working with the Galaxy during the era that David Beckham was out here, we talked about this type of stuff. And the fact is, people would say, oh, well, Buffalo or Toronto in the winter when it's 30 below, who wants to go and play there? It's just as bad as suffering the heat in the summer. But during the worst time, which is usually, what, around January or something like that, guess what? You take a winter break, just like Germany does. And you take that gap there to let the season sort of set itself down, and the weather is very inclement. You don't have to worry about anything else in your criteria, in your time frame. You've got the kids coming out of college in June. You can get those up, get those new kids in, start building camps around them, and you start looking at preseason and getting those youngsters that are coming out of college that want to play in MLS and not having to go halfway through the season before they get looked at.
Yeah, and I love the way Germany does it because they play their first set of fixtures. Everybody plays everybody once in the Bundesliga before the winter break, and then you have the 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, 6 weeks really more usually, and then you reset and you play your second set of fixtures against your reverse fixtures, basically. MLS could set up the very same way. I think this is something that has to happen if we're serious about player development and we're serious about aligning with the world game. Gary alludes to Don Garber and Don Garber's excuses, and I agree there are excuses on this. Part of it is he's got a mentality of an American sports executive, and he, for all his rhetoric about, well, we want to be part of the global football, they resist the most obvious things that could make them part of the global game, and I think this is one. The other is solidarity payments and training compensation, although they did pay that in the case of Alphonso Davies going from Vancouver to Bayern Munich. But that's another thing that the world honors, and that promotes player development. And we need that in the United States because our player development is worse than it was 15 years ago. It's worse than it was when the DA was created.
Yeah, but hang on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kardik, 1 second. You're going off topic. I got to say one thing then. I agree with a lot of what you guys are saying. Two things, though. Viewership was down like 16 or 18% last year. I agree it needs to move. But when you're going into player development, get out in front of that, dude. It has you're making the argument for tempo and weather. That's probably the least argument that you can make. The reason we're developing at the rate that we are isn't because of temperature or when the season is. You can make an argument here and there, but that's the smallest, most finite argument you can make in that aspect. You have to look at the age groups from 16 to 20. What's going on developmental-wise? What's going on when they go to college? That's where the major downfall is. There's a reason, and I know we're off topic here. I support a lot of what you're saying, but be real careful. There's a reason that at the youth level, from the time the kids are 8 years old till maybe 14, 15, 16, they're able to compete with everybody else around the world. The dramatic decline drops. It's not because of weather. It's not because of when they're being developed at that time of year. That's a whole other argument.
Yeah,
I agree
with you there.
One of the factors, but there are several factors. We're not going to get into that into those on this show, obviously. But yeah, player development needs to improve in this country. I think we all agree on that.
And the problem is when you come out of high school at 16, that is your prime learning curve between that and 23.
Exactly.
When you come out of university at 23 and become a professional, guess what? The league has already passed you by. That's the problem right there.
Spot on.
Yeah.
And
absolutely, and that's another problem there.
MLS has been so good in the last few years in terms of going and getting DPs from South America and getting younger designated players. I mean, I think that's been one of the reasons the league has elevated its quality of play. Unfortunately, that's come at the expense of a lot of young American players, but it's just the way it is, unfortunately.
That you could say about any league. Look at England. England, we invented the game. We should be the greatest team out there. But you know what? The English players don't get a chance to play unless you watch the championship because the international players that the money brings in is what funds the Premier League. That's what people want to watch is the best players in the world playing in the Premier League. Unfortunately, the best players in the world aren't English. So you can say that about any league, and, you know, it has to be a limit put on it. And it's the same here. I mean, I love the designated player. Oh, my God, we had Zlatan out here. We've had Beckham out here. We've had, you know, Chicharito, who's here now. It's great for the league, but it takes the space of a youngster that's up and coming that needs to develop.
And that's the truth. That's the truth anywhere you play, gentlemen. It's always going to be those hot international players, no matter how young or how down the, you know, in the middle of the pack they are. If they're going to impact a domestic roster spot, that's the situation we have. But of course, you know, this coronavirus has also been impacting, you know, all these competitions around the world. And Devin, now the Olympics have now been officially postponed. And what does that mean for CONCACAF's Olympic qualifying tournament now? Do they still, you know, if they do come back and there is a cure for this virus, you know, are the Olympic Games, these qualifiers in CONCACAF, do they return as fast as possible, or are they just going to have to we're going to have to wait for new dates to come out to play these games, because you know the Olympic qualifying tournament for CONCACAF is supposed to be right now.
It means Greg Berhalter is going to have to take a look at some of the younger boys. no, I mean it's like regardless of how you feel about his squad selection or not, that's just one where you're going to have to wait for the dates, because much like everything else, it's quite difficult at this point in time to be proactive, because we're so reactionary. We don't know what the next steps are going to be, because some of that has to be dictated towards us. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm in Florida right now dealing with the minions and morons that are spring breakers running around trying to have parties. And I'm at home.
You know,
I already talked about the financial. Sorry, say that again.
You and Kardec are down in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're already dealing with those people. I mean, literally, they're doing news stories about kids that didn't care what was going on. They started in Miami, went to Fort Lauderdale. I live in Delray Beach, and outside of the financial aspect of the thing, this is scary for me. My wife's pregnant, man. She's 7 months pregnant. You know, she's 10, 11 weeks from giving birth, and that's scary stuff. And so when you don't know what the future holds for you, it's quite difficult to wonder what is going to be. I mean, there was talks of already some advancement behind the scenes with the Nations League and some other things within CONCACAF, but now you have to deal with coronavirus. And I think that a lot of people can spitball ideas behind the scenes, but we really are flying blind right now. We have no clue what this is going to look like going forward. I mean, can you imagine? Think about this. I think it's since been retracted, but about a week ago, NBA came out and said that they were going to resume in June. I don't know if that number is still there, but imagine if that doesn't take place. What if this pushes into, and now I'm referencing all sports, just not just the NBA. What if everything pushes into July, August, September? You just don't know. Because we've seen countries like South Korea and China start to get better and doing the proper testing, but other countries like Italy falling behind, United States drastically falling behind. I mean, the rate of which infection is going on, I understand it has to do with testing as well, is at like 600%+, almost doubling other nations. I think England was in the 400s yesterday, but when you just don't know from day to day what the next day is going to look like, it's so difficult to speculate. You wonder for kids in the cycle, though, how does this look like in terms of the national level going forward, where it's basically the U23s? What does that look like, whether it's Berhalter or the United States? What is Gareth Southgate going to look at for some of the boys that were going to get repetitions there? Because not only was it an Olympic year, you're setting yourself up for World Cup qualifying and go 2 years down the line to where you're making a case for the senior team. You no longer have that luxury. You know, for someone who only made reps for the U17s, I can tell you, I was always looking at the next step. Step is no longer in front of you, and you don't know when that's going to come. That's a really scary thing.
I think, though, you know, as a player, they're all, you know, been told, train as though you're playing tomorrow. Keep fit as though you're playing at the end of the week. You know, you cannot, you're absolutely right. You cannot look into the future. We have no idea what the future is. Italy is in the crisis because Italy was being Italy. You know, the people are sitting there having their glasses of wine in the afternoon when the government were telling them, this is a problem. You need to stay 6 feet away from people. And that, and they weren't. And they got into this hellish problem that they're in now. I saw a story yesterday. Alex Hleb, who used to play for Arsenal, Belarus, he said that Belarus is not taking this seriously. The league and games are still playing in that country. Now, how stupid is that? Now, they might as well all be 18-year-olds on spring break, because at 18, you're invincible, nothing affects us, and we don't have to worry about anything. But when we get a little older, congratulations to you and your wife, by the way, but that becomes life-changing, and it's scary, and it's important, and other things take on more importance. And I think that's where the global issue is, but as a player, I'm going on my playing days now. The only thing that I had to worry about was me. The club told me to be fit for this moment. I've got to be fit for this moment. And yeah, it's tough being in this bubble and being isolated. This is new for everybody, every single person in the world. This is new, but you've got to be, as a player, be prepared. No matter whether you're 16 years old or 26 years old or 36 years old, you've got to train every day in your own home ready to play next week because you don't know when it's coming.
Yeah, exactly. All that having been said, I think what Devin is saying is absolutely right. We don't know if it's going to be June, July, August. And for the U23s, for that set of players, that set of U.S. players, I think this is a real lost opportunity if they don't have Olympic qualifying because, quite frankly, other than getting called into the January camp, Greg Berhalter, with World Cup qualifying starting in earnest soon, is going to have to just pull the trigger on the 23 he thinks are the best for any given match day, 23 to 26. And a lot of those U23 guys that I think could have worked their way into the conversation may have missed the chance. And that scrubbed. And that's just unfortunate. It's just reality. One other thing I want to say while I'm on here, I want to especially thank USL, Jake Edwards and Alec Papadakis for making the decision they made, putting player safety and fan safety first. Because USL, much like League One and League Two in England, very dependent on attendance, very dependent, dependent on match day revenues in a way that MLS clubs aren't, in a way Premier League. We've just talked about Premier League and Bundesliga are much more concerned about TV. They can play, believe it or not. I know we said it would be horrible for atmosphere, but it's more important they play the matches in front of empty stands and get the TV money and not have to return those to the broadcasters than anything else. I really think what USL did was very, very show great leadership and great courage because I think for a minor league in their position, and I know I've worked obviously in lower division soccer for a long time, I know the financials of these clubs. I know it was probably much more difficult for them to make that decision than it was for MLS. So I think we really, when Devin's talking about his USL broadcast and USL season, we really have to tip our hat to them because they did something which was pretty sacrificial in terms of the financials for their league, and they made that decision quickly. They made it on the Thursday before the match day was going to start on Friday. I was heading down to FIU for the Miami FC game, working that game, and it got scrubbed, and that was the right decision.
Yeah. No, it really was, and that's a great job, of course, by Jake Edwards and head of the United Soccer Leagues and going forward. Gentlemen, just to pass along this note, this was reported 6-7 days ago. We already have a death in the representing the game in the world, a youth coach who was 21 years old, who was in Spain, a coach for Atletico Portada Alta. His name was Francisco Garcia, who was the coach of the junior team for Portada Alta in Malaga. Not only did he have the symptoms of the coronavirus, but at the same time, he was also battling leukemia going into the hospital. And sadly, if you're going to have, you know, symptoms of the coronavirus added on to other symptoms of other terrible diseases, I mean, to me, that's just a double whammy and double death of horror in my book, Gary. That's just terrible to hear. 21 years old, you get the coronavirus, plus the leukemia that's on top of it. It's a real shame that we've lost possibly maybe a, you know, who knows, maybe a futuristic manager for, you know, maybe for a top club one day. And it's just a shame that this gentleman has passed away at such a young age.
You know, sports touches us all in such different ways. And it's very personal to each and every one of us. You know, you hear the likes of Marion Fellini getting the coronavirus, the ex-Manchester United player, you know, the Real Madrid president from the 2000s, you know, dying of the disease. Recently, Mikel Arteta, Arsenal, the manager, getting it. After playing a Champions League game, you don't know where you're getting it from. You talk to other kids down in Florida, you know, they may not have it, but they're going to kill somebody that has a weakness in their immune system that will die from it. That's where we've really got to concentrate on. And I think the leagues as a whole, the federations have done a tremendous job in making sure that we're all still a part of it to some form or other, with information coming out through the media, but making sure that they take care of number one, which is what their bread and butter is their players.
Although I have to mention real quickly, the Premier League did not act until Mikel Arteta was revealed to have tested positive after his contact with the Olympiacos owner, which, by the way, is also the Nottingham Forest owner, and who I saw in the box in a match against Fulham, a match against Millwall, which Forest match against Millwall, which I had watched the previous week. So I think that's why I wanted to single USL out, because I think some leagues have put player interest, player safety, fan interest, fan safety first, like USL. I think other leagues, like the Premier League, were forced into this. And there basically were three Leicester players already in isolation. Brendan Rodgers had come out and openly said that in his press conference. There were other teams that had guys in isolation or self-imposed quarantine. Then you had that night the drip of other news reports. You had Hudson-Odoi test positive, and he had possibly gotten it in the crowd at Stamford Bridge. Remember, he's injured now. He was sitting in the crowd at the FA Cup match against Liverpool, and he tests positive several days later after that. And then you had Mikel Arteta. I do not think if these things hadn't been revealed, they would have canceled that set of fixtures. Remember, the UK was much more lackadaisical about this than the rest of Europe. When Spain began to shut down, France began to shut down, Boris Johnson, I don't want to get political here, but Boris Johnson was saying, hey, you know, my science advisors are telling me it can't be transmitted in these large groups. And the Chequahen Festival went ahead. They were going to let football go ahead that weekend until the Arteta positive test. So I think that there was a certain recklessness in the English game in particular. And luckily, and it's not lucky, so none of us were happy that Mikel Arteta tested positive. But luckily, someone of his stature in the game, it got them to wake up, and the next morning they postponed the fixtures. Because remember, everybody had already scuttled their fixtures, and the Premier League and the Football League were going to go ahead and play. Let's not forget.
Yeah, I think that what USL did was for their bread and butter. That's their fans. As you said, fans put money in the till. The till puts the money into the club, and that takes care of business. They had to take care of that. Premier League was bowing down to TV and to the money, and that's all it comes down to. They were so selfish in going, you know what, we need to worry about how we get these games on TV because we need the revenue. We can't give this stuff back. So what, we get a couple of people sick. Well, they'll be fine in the end because this really isn't something that concerns us. I think you're absolutely right. The recklessness of the Premier League has got something to be answered for when this all gets cleared up.
And, Devin, speak about recklessness. Liga MX down in Mexico, once MLS shut down, you know, and then the CONCACAF Champions League matches were being suspended, they played the following weekend until they decided to shut down. I mean, they were reckless, too, until they finally got their act together.
I joked with Chris Whittingham about it, and I said, you realize you're probably the only commentator in the world right now that's working. And he kind of had a chuckle and he stepped back and he said, really? And I said, think about it, dude. Everybody's closed down. And whether you agree with it or not, at that point in time, they had no confirmed cases. But again, like we've reached the point in time where that statement doesn't really hold any water anymore because there's not proper testing being done. The number was one in 11 actually could carry it, but the other 10 could have it. Just nobody knows. That's why we haven't been testing it. So, you know, as I'm sitting here chatting right now, in theory, I could be infected. I'm just asymptomatic, so I have no issues, but I can't control that. I can't control the test. So basically what Gary was saying, I just have to chill. I have to take care of myself, sit back, make sure my wife and I are fine, take care of my kids. And was it reckless by Liga MX? Monday morning quarterback, you could look at someone in the sedan, right, and say, oh, well, they don't have anybody impacted there. Why don't they continue on? But it's kind of the same thing. Do you keep chasing your tail? Following suit on what's going on around the rest of the world, yeah, it's probably best to shut everything down and relax. But why don't you tell the boys, like in Cruz Azul, is having a great start to their season that they can't step onto the pitch. You know, they walked through Portmore and the Jamaican squad in the Champions League. They've smacked a couple teams around in Liga MX already. They're beating the big teams, and they went one or two losses. Teams that basically at the top survive, as Gary said, their bread and butter is everything going on and continuing that forth. you would have liked to have seen them take action sooner, but at the same point in time, I think it's a lot easier for us now to say that compared to the people that were making those decisions then.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a scary thought right there. You know, you're going pretty good till all of a sudden it's that one case, that one red flag, and when that one red flag pops up, either you're just getting it in time or it's too late. And I think that's the situation we have here, gentlemen. This is the situation we have to be careful with. We got to try to be hopeful that our government or governments around the world, they can find the proper cure for this coronavirus, make these antidotes so that we can, you know, get back into the swing of things, get football back to where it should be, up and running for the people, give a couple of weeks, maybe 2 weeks, to get those game fitness levels back. Fitness, as Gary said, is one thing. You always train and be ready for the next day, but I think it's going to probably take maybe 2 weeks to get back into the swing of things before we get back into true match shape for all these league games. I know we got some time, so let's go ahead and some final thoughts here, gentlemen. We'll start off with Gary Richards, and then we go to Kardec, and then we go to Devin. So, Gary, final thoughts, if you don't mind, please.
Get this over with now. Let's get back to watching some football. Miss it terribly. I saw somebody on the couch next to me last Sunday morning. I didn't realize I had a wife. I'm usually tuned in to watching football. It's just, you know, this is something unprecedented. I can't say this will never happen again because I think it probably will somewhere down the line. It's cyclical like everything else. But it's certainly, we have to learn from all of this and come out stronger. And, you know, I think a step back has really helped because we can't allow the money factor to dictate what's happening. And when that doesn't, human life is saved.
Yeah, I agree with Gary, and I think that we have to make sure, and I know, again, I hate to bring this up, the Premier League, Bundesliga, other leagues don't want to return TV money. I want to be confident that they don't push a resumption too early and endanger people's well-being and safety because they're trying to recoup that TV money. So I like the suggestion Devin and Gary both made earlier. Let them, and Devin's right, Qatar 2022 is a big part of this. We're going to have to realign and have some funky breaks with the calendar anyway. Just let them resume when it's safe and finish the season when they can complete all their fixtures, and we can figure out the rest of the calendar from there. We can figure out contracts based on that, transfer windows, et cetera. Don't force teams to start kicking a football again, a soccer ball in May. And then endanger player safety and endanger fan safety. That's my only request. So let's hunker down. Let's get through this, and we'll have football in the end once again, whenever that is.
And Devin, your thoughts, please.
Just carry the same sentiments. Better safe than sorry, right? Let's be unselfish now. This thing can carry an incubation period of 4 to 5 days. So even if I go to the store and escape today, I don't know what it's going to look like come the end of the week. Sit down, hang out at home. For this fast-paced world that we live in, enjoy this time. And it sounds ridiculous to think, but take a positive out of it. You know, I mentioned, again, I'm referencing myself here because it's easy for me to look at that situation, but I'm taking advantage of more time with my wife because I'm always on the road and traveling. I get to see my dogs. I'm rearranging my office. You know, take advantage of the time with your family. Reach out to loved ones, communicate, be kind to others, and just get on, because the less selfish we are now, the more selfish we can be in a positive manner later, enjoying football together, going to the pub, getting a beer, and watching this beautiful game that is currently depriving our lives.
And my final thought is this. Everyone, please keep your head above the water. Keep your wits about you. Don't go crazy. Just remember, life is precious. Don't do anything rash. The game will come back. I believe it will come back. But we just have to remain calm, cool, and collected. And whatever you need to do to restock food, water, toilet paper, do it in a rational way and just keep calm, everyone. this situation will pass. When it will pass, I don't know. But the truth is, once this cure will be found and implemented to every single person out there, we'll get back to our daily lives, and we will rant and rave about this wonderful, lovely game that we all call football. Devin Kerr, Carter Krishnire, Gary Richards, thank you all for joining me tonight. Have a good evening, and be safe, please, with you and your loved ones. All right. So thanks again to my guests tonight, former Fox Soccer analyst Gary Richards from World Soccer Talk, Carter Krishnire, USL Championship analyst and Open Cup analyst, and CONCACAF Champions League analyst, Mr. Devin Kerr. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for joining me tonight. As always, please try to enjoy your football, and please, once again, keep your wits above you. Be calm and be safe. This will pass. When it will, we'll all be better for it. Because why? Because we've all been calm, cool, collected, and we'll get back into the swing of things. Thank you. Oh, excuse me. Thank you very much for joining me tonight. Have a good night. Take care. So long. And bye-bye for now. See you next week, everybody.